The question, one of the questions submitted was how many brickyards were operating in Saginaw County around the turn of the century? And what kind of brick did they manufacture? First of all, in this area, the top level of our terrain is sand and black dirt, but a few inches down is about a stratum of 12 to 18 feet of blue clay. And it was this clay that was adapted to making a brick that was economical, durable, and readily available. One of the early yards was started by Solomon Mault, who migrated here from Scotland. And he set up a yard in section 18 of Saginaw Township. This site was just north of the present development of Ivy Hill Condominiums, which is located about a half a mile north of the intersection at State Street. This yard had operations on both sides of the old Midland Road, and the point of shipment was on the river bank, as a great amount of the brick were delivered in those days, that is, in the 1850s and 1860s, by scow or tug to the city of Saginaw and on down to Bay City, Michigan. Mr. Mault started his operations in about 1970 and 1870, and by 1880 he had achieved a production of 500,000 brick per season, employing only 14 persons. A brief sketch of this operation is found in the History of Saginaw County of 1881 at page 678. Now, along the river there are other yards. The A.B. Payne Brick and Tile Works is lithographed in the Saginaw County Atlas for 1877 at page 113. This yard, likewise, was on the Tittabawassee River, but instead of being on the east bank, it was on the west bank, and it was better than 2 miles downstream, bordering the old Michigan Central Railway, which later became the New York Central Railway and to present day is part of the Penn Central Railroad system. For those students who wish to review this soliloquy a bit further, the remnants of that yard can be found on the east side of Strobel Road, just north of the railroad tracks in James Township, Saginaw County, Michigan. Now, another yard on the river was the John Barr Brickyard, which was located in Section 18, Saginaw Township, Saginaw County, and it was on the site of the present Ivy Hill Condominium Development, which was adjacent to and bordered the Solomon Mault Yard. This yard was illustrated at page 45 of the 1877 Saginaw County Atlas. By far the most prominent yard of all was the Thomas Parker Yard. This was the original family enterprise, and it was south of both the Mault and the Barr Yards and located at the intersection of State Street and Midland Road. The old family home is still existent, or extant, and it is known as the White House. This was a mansion in the early days, and it was fondly recalled that it was built on the banks of the Tittabawassee River. A beautiful picture or lithograph of this home is found at page 45 of the 1877 Atlas also. And it is described in detail in the History of Saginaw County for 1881 at page 685. And at pages 730 through through 733 in a book entitled Portraits and Biographies of Saginaw and Bay County, published in 1892. Thomas Parker, our great-grandfather, was a farmer. He owned 180 acres of land in Section 19 there in Saginaw Township, which ran along State Street from the river all the way down to Brockway Road and south about 660 feet or more. The White House, which was referred to earlier, was built in 1865 at a cost of approximately $12,000 and was made out of brick manufactured from the farm. Thomas Parker was the oldest of the brickmakers, and he was born on August the 27th, 1818. And before he died, he had achieved a production of over 2 million brick per year and employed 18 persons in a seasonal operation from the time the weather became clement in the spring, which was normally about the middle of April, until about Halloween in the fall. He had one daughter who was the grandmother, who was our grandmother, Mary Parker, and she married William Day. And she outlived her husband and continued the family business with her sons, which we will discuss later on. Now, Thomas Parker was an industrious individual. He is known for his persistence and his energies, and all of the documentary evidence shows that he came from Scotland via the Erie Canal to Buffalo, then by boat to Detroit in 1846. And he walked from Detroit, Michigan to Saginaw, Michigan, and had many contacts with the friendly Indians and lived from the plentiful deer meat that was available. A further view of this man can be found in the portraits and biographies referred to earlier. The brickworks which he started were quite extensive and prospered from 1859 on. He was often referred to as the oldest brickmaker in the county, and at one time he was operating 3 yards. It can be said with pride that he was the most successful brick manufacturer in the area. Now, as to his only daughter, Mary, she was a dominant and forceful individual. She was a mother of 6 children, but 2 of the sons remained at the homestead and in the family business. James Day was slightly older than our father, Thomas Parker Day, and they continued with the brick operations after their grandfather's death for nearly 50 years, because William, their father, met an untimely death due to occupational injuries, period. This yard was a leading producer of clay brick for nearly every important building in Saginaw and Bay counties for the period that we mentioned. In fact, it continued that way until early in the 20th century, and probably until about 1920. As time went on during the course of their manufacturing operations, the market area widened and it demanded an additional yard where there would be rail facilities available. This yard was found in James Township on the Michigan Central Railroad at its junction with the Pierre Marquette Railway. Now, this latter comment is important. A reconnoitering of the area out in James Township will show that just west of Strobel Road, the Pierre Marquette, which is now the Chesapeake and Ohio Railway, branches off to Hemlock, Merrill, St. Louis, Alma, and points west all the way to Ludington. The Michigan Central veers off through St. Charles, Owosso, Lansing, Jackson, and points southwest. This facility was a natural complement to the river and horse transportation available only at the corner of Midland and State Road. Before delineating further in relation to the Thomas Day operation on South River Road on the railroad track, let's review clay manufacturing operations along the railroad that were extant at the time that our father Thomas Day purchased in 1905. First, there was a small yard known as the Raby Yard in Section 1 of James Township. A close examination of the area still indicates a pond on Eater Road, which is approximately 1/2 mile west of South River Road, just north of the railroad tracks. It was powered by horses, including turning of the booms and digging of the clay by hand and loading onto horse-drawn carts. The maximum employment figure was about 18 men. Now, just east of the Raby yard and on the other side of the track, on the north side of the track also, was the Sperry yard. This yard operated in the tile business until the late 1930s or early 1940s. This yard made farm tile principally and also clay building blocks. Now, these blocks had a corrugated surface which was adaptable to plastering on the outside, and there are many examples of this type of home building today in the area of James, Thomas, and Saginaw Township. The blocks were about 5 inches thick, 12 inches long, and about 8 inches wide. This yard, however, emphasized farm drain tile and employed about 16 men. This yard was later purchased by the Hancock Brick and Tile Company of Findlay, Ohio, which had a more efficient operation at Corunna, Michigan. And today they still operate the yard at Corunna, just outside of Owosso, Michigan. Now, farther down towards the city, and just about a half a mile west of the Payne Brick and Tile Works, was the Saginaw Clay Products Yard. This was about a half a mile west of the Payne's Works, and it too made field tile. However, it attempted to employ continuous ovens and more sophisticated kilns, K-I-L-N-S. Now, this clay, as we will show later in this soliloquy and dialogue, required the finished product to be baked or burned. And that term, although it's spelled K-I-L-N-S, was pronounced kill or kills. And the operation at the Saginaw Clay Products was not able to produce a product that returned enough profit to continue their sophisticated operation. As a matter of fact, it went out in one of the early recessions of the start of the 20th century. Now, the Meador Mercer Yard is the yard which was purchased by Thomas Day in 1905 to meet these market demands beyond what could be serviced by the river and the horse and wagons which worked out of the Thomas Parker Yard at the corner of State Street and Midland Roads in Saginaw Township. This yard was located, as previously indicated, on South River Road. And to help the students of history and those who may be interested in this in the future, it was about 1.5 miles south of the electric signal light at Gratiot and River Roads in Thomas Township. By going south about 1.5 miles, you would cross the C&O railroad track and then the Pennsylvania railroad track, and it was immediately bordering the south side of the Pennsylvania Central Railway as it exists today. This operation was chronicled in the several publications of the Michigan Geological and Biological Surveys of 1922, 1924, and 1926, and especially at pages 357 and 358 of the 1920 publication, which is entitled Clays and Shales of Michigan and Their Uses. We will discuss this yard because we know more about it. We know about it from the time that we were born and the time we were in rompers. We played and worked at that yard. This plant was modernized by our father and by 1920 employed about 30 men and had a daily capacity of 22,000 brick. This daily capacity was called a stint. This stint permitted the men to commence work either on a regular schedule or starting earlier and finishing earlier, especially in hot days in July and August period. This operation was again a seasonal operation from about April until October.
Bob, would you and Wyman describe the process of making brick in relation to raw materials, finished products, and the means of getting the brick delivered and on the market?
For one to have an appreciation of the clay manufacturing industry, we should first realize that the raw materials are exceedingly bountiful. Clay is the basic product, or basic material. And in Saginaw Valley, the blue clay is abundant. Unfortunately, it does not have a ferrous oxide composition, which gives a beautiful red color to the bricks in Williamsburg, Virginia, or in Georgia, or in Carolinas, or Pennsylvania, or Ohio. So with the start of our materials here, we should think about a typical 40 or 50 acre field, which has a topsoil of some 10 to 20 inches, and this topsoil must be scraped back. Some people call this the overburden. And this black dirt, by a freak of nature, turned out to be a valuable item itself after the operation of the brickyard ceased. It was piled up in windrows 8 to 10 feet high with a base of about 30 feet, usually along the fence line of the property. This exposed the clay, and therein began the operation. First of all, the clay had to be dug. In the early days, it was dug by pick and shovel and placed upon two-wheeled carts with heavy horses, either Belgian or Percherons, and actually hauled to the site of the mixing mill, which is known in the industry as the pug mill combined with the molding machine. Later on, as the operations became more mechanical, the day yards had rails with four-wheeled adaptable clay cars, which swung on a half moon base that could be dumped into the mixing plant when it arrived at the molding machine. The clay was transported to Wyman by these clay cars up to an inclined grade out of the pit to the surface and then up to the pug mill. Would you tell the pug mill, describe the pug mill and what happened to the clay when it arrived at the plant?
Well, it was hauled up this hill and then dumped into a pit at the top of the mill in order to, they had this hill in order to beat it by gravity. And then it was mixed. This mill mixes it with an auger, something like a hamburg grinder, you might say. And we either had to add a little water if it was too dry or a little sand if it was too wet. And of course the man that run the mill, the engineer, understood that business and knew when it was just about right. He knew whether he had to add water or sand. Then it was mixed, and as it was mixed, it went through the machine, which was down, into what we call the press, and was pressed into the molds. Now,
let me interrupt here a bit. Was this mill that we had known as a Wellington pug mill, which is in common operation today?
I believe it was. I've kind of forgotten, but I've heard him mention that name, so that was probably it.
Now, after it was mixed up and ground up by these pugs and conveyed on to the pressing operation, tell us about that.
Well, first of all, I might mention it was very dangerous. They kept us kids away from it when we were small, away from that mill, because if you'd happen get in that, it would be the end. And it was forced, it was mixed and forced into the press machine, into molds. Now these molds made a kind of a round robin circuit. A mold was pushed in by one man called the sander, and it was press pull as it was pushed ahead. He put another mold in so that it made the circuit. Well, then the man that we called it was pushed out on a table, and we had two men there. One was called a striker and the other a dumper. Well, the striker had a knife about 16 to 20 inches long, and it had a wooden handle on the top of it. It was probably made out of old cross-cut saws. And he would strike the top of the mold as close as he could in order to make it smooth. And then the dumper would pick the mold up and turn around and dump it on a turntable which had pallets on it.
What is a pallet? Tell us what a pallet is.
Well, a pallet is a board that was 10 inches wide and 32 inches long, just a little larger than the mold, and about a half inch thick, made out of good pine lumber with three slats across the bottom to keep it from breaking.
Let me ask you this. How many brick did those molds and those pallets hold?
Six brick for each one of them. The mold held six and it was dumped on the pallet. And then these pallets were on a turntable with six sides to it. And on the on each side was a door on hinges, or a, you might call it a door, and you'd set the pallet on the door, and it would be upright so that the dumper could put the mold upright and then tip it over flatways on the pallet. Then he would turn to his left and drop the mold back into the sander, which...
What is this sander? What was the purpose of that?
Well, the sander was filled with burnt, dried sand, as we called it, and it would rotate. The mold would go through the sander, and the sand would fill the mold the dry sand would go into the mold, and then as it turned around and dumped it out, it would be lined, so your brick would have a smooth finish to it.
Did this sand give a attractive glow to the new brick when they were eventually baked?
Yes, it would give it an even glow, and it was fairly white.
Now let me ask you this. For the local color here, the men that operated these machines, were they a strong, hardy group of German descent, basically?
They had to be real strong men, especially all of them did, but the dumper especially. He had to lift many moles